Welcome back to Random Trek, the podcast in which I, your host, Scott McNulty, discuss a random episode of Star Trek with a non-random guest. My guest tonight is Andrew Cunningham. Andrew, thank you for joining me.
Oh, no problem. Thanks for having me.
I am excited to talk about a Deep Space Nine episode, but before we jump into that, tell the people a little bit about yourself.
Well, I'm the reviews editor at Ars Technica, a tech site that you may or may not have heard about. Like, I'm not going to get my feelings hurt if you haven't.
I think most people who are listening to a Star Trek podcast have heard of Ars Technica.
I think that Venn diagram is pretty much just a circle.
I think so.
And then I also do a couple of podcasts of my own. I do one with my friend Craig called Overdue, where we talk about, like, we read a book that we've never read before and then we talk about it. And then one called Appointment Television, which is like TV and general pop culture criticism, stuff like that. So, yeah, that stuff's at OverduePodcast.com and ATVPodcast.com, respectively.
Excellent. And I have listened to Overdue, and specifically, I've listened to a couple episodes, but I would recommend to folks to listen to the Sparrow episode, The Incomparable. We did a book club episode about the Sparrow, so it's nice to hear the two opinions, there you go, of the Sparrow, which is, I'm losing my words, and compare and contrast what people thought
that
of the Sparrow.
Like, it really stuck with me. I'm not going to like say a whole bunch more about it, but do read it if you haven't, because it left a big impact, I think.
It is one of my favorite books, bar none, and I was worried, I promise people we'll talk about Star Trek, but I was worried, I read it when it first came out, and then we decided to do an episode of The Incomparable about it, and I worried because I hadn't read it since I read it many years ago, and in my mind, it was like this great book that made me think so many things, and I was so worried that I would read it again and I would think, this thing is awful. But luckily,
you never want to do that. There are some episodes of Star Trek that do that, actually.
Exactly. Luckily, it lived up to my rememberings, unlike MacGyver, which did not. Don't rewatch MacGyver if you grew up in the 80s and watched MacGyver and as a little boy thought it was the coolest show ever.
And if you've never watched it, just like keep never watching it.
Yes, I recommend fine. Either the original or the reboot. Just get both of them. But this is not a MacGyver. Oddly enough, not an episode of Random Trek about the Sparrow or MacGyver.
That would be too random.
It would be stretching the boundaries of my format, I think. Mm-hmm. We're going to talk about Star Trek. Before we jump into it, though, I have a couple of questions for you, Andrew. Would you consider yourself a Star Trek fan?
I would say yes. I'm not like so deep in the weeds that I've like read all the books or anything, but like I have seen everything but Enterprise, which I did. Like I watched most of the first season, like when it was on, when my dad was watching it, and I burned out and I just never went back to it. But other than that, I've watched like every episode of every series, every movie. So yeah, I think I'm pretty much in this thing now.
I think so. I think that that is sounds like a Star Trek fan to me. Mm-hmm. So you stopped watching Enterprise, which is a good decision. Mm-hmm. What series would you say is your favorite if you had to pick one?
If I had to pick one, I'd say DS9 overall. If I'm gonna just sit down and watch one, it'll probably be TNG because of the more episodic format, but. As an entire like body of work, I think DS9 holds up the best of them.
Now you mentioned that you the last time you watched Enterprise, it was because your father was watching it. Did he get you into Star Trek?
He did. Yeah, we watched like they started showing episodes of the original series on the Sci-Fi Channel like in the late 90s, and so we had us watching those. And then I have very like dim memories of watching TNG when it was on. I was born in 85, so I would have been like pretty young in the late 80s, early 90s when that was on. But I do remember like watching it with him, even if I don't remember any particular episodes.
It was a formative experience.
Yes, exactly.
You were steeped in Star Trek at a young age. Well, that's great. So let me ask you one final question, and then we will get on to this episode of Deep Space Nine, which we watched. And this is my favorite question because it always either people have an immediate answer or they have to think for a moment. Who is your favorite character, your favorite Star Trek character?
My favorite character. As a pairing, and I know this is like a cop-out answer, but we're talking about DS9. As a pairing, I think Chief O'Brien and Dr. Bashir's friendship is like the cutest thing. Just the cutest thing that's ever happened.
I agree.
But just as a character who like stands up on his own and is like looms huge in the cultural consciousness, I guess I'm gonna have to go Spock. Like, I don't think there's any other individual character who so like sums up what Star Trek is trying to do. And when Leonard Nimoy passed away last year, that was like really actually hard for me. Like, I was affected by that in a way that I've never been affected by any, you know, any death of a person I didn't actually know in real life. So,
yes, me too. I'm not a super emotional guy, mm-hmm. which perhaps is what attracts me to Spock.
Yeah,
I did get kind of choked up when I heard Leonard Nimoy died. And then, of course, I watched Wrath of Khan to, mm-hmm. You know, be in his memory. And the scene where, oh, spoiler alert, Spock dies in the Wrath of Khan, if you haven't seen it. Also, if you're listening to this podcast and you haven't seen the Wrath of Khan, I don't know what to tell you. the scene where he dies always makes you cry. And of course, then it made me cry even more because he was actually dead. So that was very
real
sad.
Now. Ugh,
that's right.
Okay.
now I'm depressed again.
Great. This is going to be a really fun one, I think.
Well, let's pivot from that highly poignant moment to talk about The Muse, a Deep Space Nine episode from season 4, episode 21 for people like keeping count.
Deep in season 4.
Yes. This is, now you were talking about, I think, you know, Deep Space Nine is well known for story arcs and kind of a weaving a rich tapestry of a story. This episode is a standalone episode that is one of, it harkens to TNG, where no one really speaks of it ever again.
Right.
And it's kind of not, I mean, usually I save my judgments for the end of the episode, but this, not so good, The Muse.
It feels like one where, like, they had clearly blown all their effects budgets on some of the Dominion War stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're like, we have to shoot an episode only on sets we already have that costs nothing. So let's start from there and work backwards.
And let's get Majel Barrett in here.
Yeah, that's always fun.
Yeah, and this is, sadly, for Majel Barrett, her last appearance on Star Trek. Is this episode, which is not a great way to end a Star Trek appearance, I don't think, but she lives on as the computer voice, so she's fine.
You know, oddly enough, like, I liked her bit of this more than I remember liking it the first time, and I think it's because, like, her relationship with Odo resonates with me more than her relationship with, like, Picard or any of the other, like, TNG folks.
So let's talk about Loxana, because she is such... Sure. A strong character, and I think she's one of these characters who, much like Q, is pretty divisive. You either
right.
like her, or you think, ugh, a Loxana episode.
Yeah, and like on DS9, you could maybe think that you were going to get away from it for a bit, but then in like season 1, they kept trotting out all these like B-tier TNG guests to like get people to watch the show.
They're like, hey, everybody, you like Loxana, right?
Yeah, everyone's favorite. It's Loxana Troi.
Now, I do like Loxana Troi. I like her. I think it's weird in this episode, though, because I think of her as like this strong, independent woman. She doesn't take sass or guff from anybody. And this episode, she's very different, which I don't quite understand.
I would say, and I don't want to get too much into like a whole other episode of Star Trek, but I also have watched the first season one with her in it, where she and Odo get like trapped in that turbo lift, and like he like melts into a puddle in her lap, and
she
then, like takes her wig off, and they both have like this moment of vulnerability that really like. I agree. Maybe she's not acting totally in character, but I think if she's going to be like vulnerable with any character, it would be Odo, because they have that like unique bond. But like, maybe also I'm reading too much into it and giving the writers too much credit.
No, I think you're right, because that episode really sets up this episode. Well, at least their relationship, and it makes the end of this episode, or well, near the end when they get married. I actually teared up. When Odo explains his true reasoning for what, well, he needs to convince people there that they really are going to get married. We'll get to it. But he explains that, you know, until Loxana came around, he stopped being alone when he met Loxana. And that got me teary-eyed. Because
it worked.
It's a touching moment in an otherwise not great episode of Star Trek.
Exactly.
And so I bought that part, and I think their relationship really saves that whole, I guess it's the A plot. It's hard to tell in this episode what is the A plot and the B plot.
I was reading the Memory Alpha, like the production notes, and I think it started as the A plot and then got demoted for some reason. I don't know why, because it still feels more like an A plot than the other stuff that's going on.
It is far more interesting. Now, I don't dislike Jake Sisko in any way, but I've never really found him to be terribly interesting as a character.
The problem with Jake is that he's got like no reason to hang out with any of the other characters except for like Sisko. And I actually do think that their relationship, their like father-son thing, is very sweet, as you don't see it in a lot of other Treks. Like the TNG didn't really have anything like that. Like Worf and Alexander do not have the same relationship.
No, a little different.
But yeah, like he's pointedly not in Starfleet and doesn't want to be. And I think that's like an interesting thing to do with a character. But then when your show is all about people who are in Starfleet, it's like hard to give him stuff to do.
Or
like
Starfleet adjacent.
Yeah, right.
And so he becomes a writer. So he's a journalist, which I guess is interesting. That becomes interesting later when the Dominion War is happening and he's, you know, trying to file his stories, and he gets a cold dose of reality when he tries to, you know, collaborate. Well, not, I wouldn't say collaborate, but he tries to work with the Dominion because he feels like if he's going to work with them, they will let his story get out. And then he finds out, you know, that they only want him to tell the story they want told. And otherwise they won't let his story. So he gets interesting. But this episode, he's a budding nascent author, and he's trying to do some character studies.
This is very like first year writing seminar exercise that he's doing, because the episode opens and he's like on the promenade watching people leave. It might be Quarks, it might be somewhere else, it's not really important, but like he comes up with a little like vignette for all of them, like, oh, here's a guy who's dressed as a priest but actually he's a con man, and just like little stuff like that. Not a bad little like character exercise if you're trying to do that sort of thing.
No, I found it good. Now, I did find it annoying that Jake uses speech to text, apparently, when he's writing. I'm like, come on, Jake, don't do that in public. Just type on your iPad there. You've got Apple Pencil.
It's the future. Like, I assume they had worked that out, and it was just like natural, and it always worked 100% great all the time.
I'm just thinking it would be annoying to everybody else around him for him to just be blathering on about his character sketches. So that's the A plot. I don't know.
It's what the episode is named for. So let's go with that.
Yeah, I guess so. Why don't we start there? I know we started with Loxana because I really think that's a more interesting part, but let's go through the Jake plot, as it is. It's pretty straightforward. He wants to be a writer. It's clear he's struggling to find his place in the world. He wants to be a writer, and he's looking for some inspiration. Some weird, well, maybe not weird, just she does look a little creepy. This alien comes out. And,
it's like not of a species that we've encountered before. Like, I think like maybe they just had a random forehead generator that they had for these like one-off alien species. But yeah,
I'm pretty sure they did. They kind of lock eyes when Jake is doing these character sketches. And then, you know, oh, this person is going to be an important character, but we don't know who she is. And then later at the Jake is working once again on his novel, looking on his iPad there. I was tempted to try to freeze the frame and see what it said, because they show us his screen, but I didn't do that. There she is. She appears at the Replimat at the next table, and she's like, hey, you're a writer, aren't you?
And because he's a teenage boy and she is a woman paying attention to him, he like gets drawn into this conversation.
He is immediately hooked on this conversation. Forgets his like, orange juice, which looks delicious.
So she's like telling him that she's a person who like likes and likes to help out artists. And like, I don't know, maybe we can meet up later and I can help you with this book that you're working on.
Right. Maybe you can come to my quarters and we'll help. I'll help you with your book. And I don't know. I mean, obviously, it's a little heavy handed, I think, that she is coming on super strong and she has her own reasons for it. But it came off to me as, once again, a little creepy.
Yeah, I guess you could explain it away and say that, like, oh, maybe as like a muse alien, she has some otherworldly charm that helps her like draw in her her victims, or like maybe there's just a certain kind of person who is tempted by this kind of thing, and that's why Jake folds instantly without really asking himself why a stranger would be inviting him to her quarters.
Maybe he's just desperate.
He might, that, you know, I've been there.
I have certainly stared at a blinking cursor and thought, if only an alien would come and promise me that I could come up with a good story idea.
Yes, exactly.
I would take in a second, I'd go to her quarters, I'd do what she told me to do. Mm-hmm. So I believe it, but I do think you don't think she's doing it out of the kindness of her heart.
No.
You know she's going to get something out of this. We don't know what.
Yeah. So later on, we'd flash forward to later. And so we've got the A plot and the B plot like never intersecting because they have nothing to do with each other.
It's as if they could be two completely different episodes.
Yeah, just like alternating between the two of them. So Jake goes to her quarters later, mm-hmm. and he's got his, you know, Star Trek iPad out and he's writing on it for a bit.
Her quarters, and then, though, before so many candles.
Yes, lots of candles.
So many. It made me think, because she has just arrived on Deep Space Nine, I think. And I guess the first thing she does is just sets up a bunch of candles.
You go to the replicator, you get a bunch of candles.
I guess they're free, so why not?
I've got to imagine, like, yeah, if you're in a Star Trek universe and you're like going to a hotel or you're renting a room or something, you're gonna, like, I don't know if they charge the room for replicator usage or if you just, like, get as much stuff as you want. But
it is unclear, right? Because the Federation is a cashless society. So
right.
It's post-scarcity. I assume you just show up and you get whatever you want. Mm-hmm. But Deep Space Nine is like on the hinterlands where, you know, there's still latinum. And I'm assuming you pay for things at Quarks. So I would guess you'd have to pay for a room on Deep Space Nine. I don't know.
I suppose you would. I don't know. I guess it depends on whether you're renting it from the Federation or from the Bajorans. Presumably, the Bajorans still have like bills to pay. So.
Oh man, the Bajorans need all the help they can get. So I'm imagining they will take that sweet, sweet money and charge mm-hmm. you per replicator use. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like, I assume it's like the minibar. Yeah, right. Even if you walk past it and you get charged.
She gets in there. She replicates like 100 candles. She sets it all up. And the mood is set. So Jake comes in, he's writing on his iPad for a bit, and she says to him, well, wouldn't you, like, maybe you should write on paper.
And he's like,
maybe that'll help you out.
WTF, I've never written on paper.
And, okay, so I want to spend basically the whole rest of the episode talking about this, because Jake says he's never written on paper before, but he has, like, immaculate penmanship.
I want to talk about that, too.
So his penmanship is so great. I was jealous of it. I've never been able to write that well in my entire life.
No, and when I was a kid, I'm older than you, not maybe by 8-9 years. So mm-hmm. I had to write a lot of stuff. You kids today, you don't have to write anything.
I had to write stuff too.
No, you're so young. I'm sure you had a robot to write for you or something. Mm-hmm. But my handwriting was not good then when I was writing all the time. It was readable almost, but now, you know, I type everything. I use my iPhone to take notes in meetings and stuff. I hardly ever handwrite anything, and when I have to, I can't read it myself.
Yeah, that's the grocery list in our house. It's pretty much the only thing that we still write on paper, and you sometimes have to stare at things to figure out like the intent behind the scribblings.
Do I need an avocado? Is that an avocado? I don't know. You always need an avocado. That's the answer.
But yeah, apparently Jake, like, I don't know if he just has like a learning bed that feeds this knowledge into his head or whatever, but despite the fact that he's never put pen to paper before, he's great at it.
He is, and he is writing in cursive. You would think he'd print, mm-hmm. but no, he's got a fountain pen that the Muse lady had. That's a famous author's, I guess. And he's off to the races. He knows how to use the pen. He doesn't smudge the ink, because that's the most annoying thing about using a fountain pen. But Jake apparently is a natural. The kid's got talent.
He does. Or maybe she's transferring it to him or something. The episode never makes clear exactly what her whole deal is.
She is weird. Yeah. I don't, and that's not a judgment. Her character is weird.
Because her name is, did we say her name already? Onaya?
We did not. Onaya is her name.
Her name is Onaya, yeah.
And she, and then so she gets really close to Jake when he's writing on this paper, and they're basically like spooning. And Jake is all into this, like the words are flowing. She gives him a good advice. which I think all writers would take, right? You know, you just write a crappy first draft is basically what she's saying. So you write down the first sentence because he has an opening line for his novel. And then she says, just don't stop writing. You can go edit it later, which is actually good writing advice. The bad part, though, is as he's writing it, she is apparently like these golden particles are flowing out of his head. And I assume she's like some kind of, I don't know, creativity vampire? I don't quite understand.
Yeah, she's giving him a head massage, which, like, to be honest, I would be on board with while I was writing. Like, if I could just have someone back there giving me a head massage when I needed one. But yeah, she's pulling out like little yellow clouds of creative energy,
I guess,
or something.
And
this is like, it's physically affecting him because you can tell because he gets a nosebleed. And then later he has on like vampire makeup and he just looks very pale.
He does look very pale. Now I have a question for you. You're a writer.
Okay.
And I say so. Well, I'm declaring you're a writer. and I've written a thing or two. And I would be so self-conscious if someone were watching me write that I would not be able to do anything. I would just think it was weird.
Yeah, I really don't like to show people things before I feel like they're finished.
Mm-hmm.
Like even if I'm handing something to an editor, like if I don't feel like it's finished, I'll just feel bad and weird about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the thing. Like, yeah, whenever I'm writing something, like my wife or a friend will be like, "Oh, can I take a look at it?" And I'm like, "No, I don't even want to talk about it."
Yeah, and it would get 100 times worse if they were just standing over your shoulder.
Even giving like you a head massage, I don't think
the whole time. I would
say no head massage. I just want privacy while I am writing this.
Or you just give them like a face mask so they can't see.
Well, there you go. I like the way you solve that problem. You really want a head massage, is what we've learned.
I would not turn one down. Just saying.
Yes, but that's so we know bad things are happening, right? Because you've already said he's writing like the Dickens. Well, actually, Charles Dickens, right? Paid by the word. Yep. But then his nose starts bleeding, and you think, oh boy, this is not going to end well.
This probably isn't great. If like the little yellow particles and the ominous incidental music did not like alert you to this fact, I think the nosebleed will do it.
And all the candles.
Yeah, right.
Too many candles.
Always be suspicious of someone with too many candles. Like if you walk into someone's house and they just have too many candles lit, you turn around and you go home.
You just go. Because she had a lot of candles. If you have not watched this episode, I am not exaggerating when I say she had way too many candles in there for my tastes. And I'm hoping that they're not like scented candles because that would be even worse.
I've got to imagine that any kind of flame on a space station.
It's not a great idea.
Is like is non-optimal to have that.
I think that is true. But she doesn't care. She's the muse. She does what she wants. And so Jake is totally hooked into this, right? He doesn't want to stop writing. He's like, I've got to get these ideas out. This novel's great. And she says, well, maybe you should stop writing, Jake. Your nose is bleeding. You look tired. And he's like, no, I am young. I am full of ideas. I'm going to keep writing on this paper that I've never seen before.
So he does that for a while. And one gets the sense maybe that they needed to pad the episode time out a little bit.
What?
Well, because later she tells him to leave again, and he does. And I'm not super clear on why, because she just comes back later to suck more of his brain juice out. Like, well, maybe she just needed him to, like, you know, refill a little bit.
Well, that's what I'm assuming. Like, whatever she's sucking out of him, he needs to rest up and take some orange juice or something to replenish.
So he goes to the Replimat. He gets his OJ. He sits down at a table. He's looking very drawn and haggard. And he, like, faints.
Yep, he's good.
Yeah, and he wakes up in Dr. Bashir's office, which is like the only scene that he's in pretty much in this episode. And he, like, I forget what the exact technobabble thing that Bashir says is wrong with him, but he has some kind of like energy signature in his brain that Bashir has never seen before. And you should always be distrustful of the unknown in the Star Trek universe, I think.
I think so. That they are explorers, but it always ends badly.
Mm-hmm. And so Sisko is around and like concerned.
but super concerned.
Yeah, like he's also like gone on a vacation somewhere with Cassidy that's never, it's like mentioned once and never shown on screen.
Oh, and they mention that because they're like, hey Jake, you should we're gonna go to the Bajoran Outback, don't you want to come with us? And immediately I think, no, I wouldn't want to go to the Bajoran Outback. Yeah, but apparently something Jake likes.
Wheel in the Bajoran Outback with nowhere to go, like I don't think that sounds great.
That's a hard pass, Dad. But he set up the whole vacation, but now he is so inspired that he's skipping it. He's got to write his novel. Mm-hmm. But that's later. But then this is a weird. I think the muse Anya whatever is a weird character. But then she gets Onaya. Weirder. Onaya, yeah. Yes, mm-hmm. Because he's in the sick bay as I call it, mm-hmm. And the nurse is doing whatever the nurse is doing, and out of nowhere she kind of coalesces. Out of these golden particles that she's been sucking out of Jake's
and
head.
And she gives the nurse one of them good old-fashioned unconsciousness chops.
That's
that
right.
Star Trek is so good at.
And then they run off into the Jeffrey's tubes, mm-hmm. so that he can finish his novel in seclusion, I guess.
Yes, right. And so that gets Sisko interested, like his son has disappeared at this point,
mm-hmm.
and so they're chasing him around DS9, and Sisko like finds him, but they're too close to the reactor, and he can't get Jake beamed out of there, even though Jake is looking pretty bad at this point.
Jake is not looking good.
Yeah.
And but luckily this Chief O'Brien in his one scene has modified the tricorder so that they can find the psychic signature and find the Muse lady. And this is where Sisko and the Muse chat, and he's like, well, they don't really chat, they argue. And he's like, what are you doing to my son? And she says, I have inspired many artists, including, Keating? Or
Keats is a big one. Catullus. Whose name I think she mispronounced.
Yes.
Who is like a Roman poet, and then also there is a made-up alien thing. Because any Star Trek list has to have like two real things and a fake thing.
Yes, because you know it's the future.
Yeah, right.
You need to throw in an alien. And he's like, Sisko, not impressed by this. And she is kind of like, this has suddenly gotten more complicated than I need in my creativity vampiric life. Mm-hmm. But I am offering Jake immortality. He has one good novel in him, which is what we learned apparently. And Sisko, not on board, shoots a phaser at her, which does nothing.
Just like shoots her. Like you're too close to the reactor to beam anybody, but phaser fire, not a big deal.
It's fine. and then that doesn't do anything, and that's kind of a cool effect. And then she kind of decoalesces into like a golden
cloud of
nebula?
Light energy and like zooms off into the distance. And that's pretty much it.
And that's her. And then
there's the little epilogue, right?
Yes, but I think she could, when she left, they did a little like warp thing. So I'm assuming she can also go warp speed.
Okay.
We've never heard of this person. We never hear of her again. She seems super powerful, immortal, and can travel at faster than light speeds.
Yeah, this is very much from the like energy being like subclass of Star Trek episodes, where it's like you've encountered this one of a kind, seemingly immortal thing, and it does its one thing with you, and then it leaves, never to be seen or heard from again.
Right. And your reaction is to shoot it.
Yeah, right.
And then, but then the epilogue, basically, Jake is convalescing, which is basically him sitting on the couch, right? And his dad is reading. He has Sisko read his book. Sisko says, it's a good start. The spelling is horrible. You need spell check. You see, paper doesn't have spell check. That's why you don't handwrite things,
it doesn't.
Jake.
That's why you do it on your pad.
Exactly.
Your penmanship and your spelling do not match.
Jake has this moment where he's like, well, I really wish I'd written it. And Sisko's like, well, dude, you did write it. She just kind of inspired you. She brought it out of you. And he's like, okay, fine. I wrote it. And then he titles it Anslem.
Yeah.
Which is the title of the book from The Visitor, which is a much better episode of Deep Space Nine.
It is. It does. Yeah.
But it ties
that,
it together.
Like that little father-son moment is probably the most compelling thing in the entire storyline.
Mm-hmm.
And I think ultimately also they kind of come down like energy beings, good, bad. I don't know. It's kind of a toss up. Like they do try to suck all your brain energy out, but this is a pretty good first draft of a book. So
you know, I don't know if we could be angry at her. She was just doing her thing, whatever that thing is.
Yeah.
And I could only imagine that Jake now has to spend a couple of days typing his handwritten first draft into his pad.
Into his pad. And that's I hope they don't do an episode about that, though it would probably be about as interesting.
Yeah, it's not great. So that's the end of the A plot, and it took me a while to realize that they were doing a pretty lazy metaphor for drugs and alcohol as writers' muses.
Really? Was that what that was?
That's kind of because he's doing it's self-destructive, but he still doesn't want to stop, and he's hurting his own health.
I don't know. Yeah, if you're talking about on-the-nose Star Trek analogies for like modern-day things, I think DS9 has done it better.
Yes.
There's that, I think that season, I think it's season one where like Keiko is in the school like trying to teach science, and then it kicks off this big science versus religion thing.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. And that is like equally on the nose, but I think a little better handled than this.
Yes, this is not good. And even the B plot does not save this, but it has more moments that I like.
Yes, right.
And so the B plot is Loxana is pregnant. Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah, she shows up to Odo's office and she's pregnant.
And you think, of course, is it Odo's baby? Even though I don't know if they ever got together, but you know,
I have like so many questions about Odo, like what Odo can and can't do down there. Like,
I have many questions too. And if he would even be interested, I guess he is because he likes Kira. He's in love with Kira. Mm-hmm. So he clearly has emotions.
But I don't know. Yeah, that might be more of an emotional thing than a physical thing. I'm not sure.
Like platonic love.
He does get something out of bonding with the female changeling, but that's like another thing.
Yeah. When I have questions about interspecies mating in general, because Loxana is pregnant, not with Odo's baby, but with some other, her husband,
It's like Jaal or something.
Jaal.
He is a Tavnian, which I think also is another race that we have not heard much about before this.
We have heard nothing about Tavnians as far as I know. They sound horrible.
Yeah, it's a race that has a lot of highly specific rituals that pertain exactly to this situation.
Yes. In that, apparently, in Tavnian culture, although I guess I should not judge, but they are a fake culture, so I can judge. If there's a baby, if it's a girl, that's what we call them, they are raised by women, so they never meet their father. And if it's a boy, they are raised by the men, and they never meet their mother until they're like 16 or something.
Right. I think like they say that they don't even know that the other gender exists until they are 16.
Which seems, how do you keep that secret for 16 years? Like there's another
gender. They must be set up for it, I guess. Like it sounds like they take it pretty seriously.
They take it very seriously.
Like when he and Loxana got married, he kind of told her that like it would be fine and he wouldn't enforce this,
right,
this like custom on her.
Now, Loxana is an attractive woman, but she's an older lady, so you would assume neither of them thought that a baby would even be an issue.
Like, Loxana's already got a grown daughter, like, run around the galaxy.
Exactly. She doesn't need a baby in her life.
But, like, I don't know. I don't know what Betazoid fertility is like, so.
Well, neither do I.
Sure.
I'm sure I can find out.
A lot of unanswered questions, Star Trek.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Star Trek.
Maybe if it was on HBO, we would know all this stuff.
Oh, well, maybe the new series will be all about fertility and what
all
changelings can do. And
unanswered birds and the bees Star Trek questions.
That's right. But yeah, so he's like, you know, don't worry. If we have a baby, which we won't, obviously, because we're both old, I won't. I'm cool. I'm one of the cool Tavnians, and I won't totally, you know, usurp the baby and take it away. Turns out,
but then they get married in that, and he's like, "Psych."
Like, remember, nope. All that, I used to be nice, but now I am reverting back to my chauvinistic nature that is part of my culture, so you cannot question it.
And so, yeah, great.
And then, yeah, so she gets pregnant. Surprise, it's a boy. Oh, no. So she runs to Deep Space Nine and to Odo, shows up and says, Odo, I need your help. Odo says, why didn't you go to Beta Zone? Which is a
logical
good question.
Question. Yes. Yeah.
And she's like, that's the first place they would look, Odo.
Although, so instead she goes to like probably the third place they would look, right?
I was gonna say, like, 'cause he shows up like very quickly. So she's not very effective at hiding from him.
Yeah, though they may call him because of the like sham wedding thing. So here's what goes down. It's like Odo and Loxana have a couple scenes where they just kind of talk to each other and hang out and kind of reestablish that relationship as they set up in like that first episode where they met, which I think you have to do with Loxana because I think people are still going to associate her with like TNG Loxana, who is pretty much always just cruising for tail.
That's true. And specifically Captain Picard.
And she's still, still is into Odo and he's still into Kira. So they they have that conversation early and decide, you know, we're just pals and that's fine.
That's right.
And so it comes out, again, speaking of like highly specific customs that pertain exactly to this scenario, there's a loophole in Tavian law that says that the baby like goes with the husband.
Right. It doesn't say the
and
father.
And not with the father.
Yes. Right. This is Odo has done like 2 minutes of research and figured this out.
So now this becomes like a Richard Gere movie where Odo needs to marry Loxana so they can take advantage of this loophole.
That's right. But they can't tell anybody that it's a sham wedding. They have to tell everybody that it's a real wedding because also in Tavnian custom, someone who requests to be at your wedding has to be allowed to be at your wedding because anyone at the wedding who doesn't believe that you are getting married for reals can basically void your marriage. And so he's going, JL. He wants to stick around because basically it's kind of like a Quaker self-uniting marriage where you basically say, I'm marrying this person, but you have to explain why. Why you fell in love with this person and convince everyone.
Yeah, so he gives like a very generic sort of sort of thing. And this is again like the only crowd scene in the whole episode with all the cast, and for some reason like Quark is there. I don't know why you would invite like your sworn enemy to your wedding.
No, I feel like they're frenemies.
sure
Quark is there, Kira's there, which must be awkward because Odo is still in love with her, but he can't tell her that this is just a wedding so that he can help his friend keep her baby.
Odo's a stand-up guy, as has been established in every other episode of DS9.
Yes.
And so he gives this sort of milquetoast like vow of love, and her and Loxana's husband stands up and says, What is this? This is crap. I don't believe you. And then at that point, Odo gives the monologue that we talked about earlier, which is very heartfelt and about like, you know, I felt like I could be myself around you and we like trust each other. And it was like a big moment for me in my like development as a sentient being. And instead of like being a jerk and saying, well, no, I still don't approve of your obviously sham wedding, the husband defeated, like hangs his head and slinks away, never to be heard from again.
Nope, we never hear from that guy again. And Quark is like, everybody come to Quark's. I'm having a party for everybody. And people are like, what?
Come on to Quark's, pregnant lady.
That's right. Drink up. I'm sure it's fine.
Maybe Cyntha Hall is okay for babies.
I guess, because it doesn't have any alcohol in it, so it's fine. Although I think Quark sells more than Cyntha Hall.
They do, yeah.
I'll let Loxana decide what she... Because I think now research shows you can have a glass of wine and it's good for a baby. I don't know. Don't take your medical advice from a Star Trek podcast, by the way.
No, like, what are you doing? go see a doctor.
Let's go to WebMD where everybody gets their advice. Which is also a sponsor. Oh, no, it's not. And so it's an interesting point, though, right? Because Odo is an interesting character. I really like Odo, and he's kind of really a sad character because he was basically a science experiment. He totally doesn't fit in. He's just struggling to get He's like Data, only with even more pathos, right? Because he's mm-hmm. been horribly treated. This is the moment, I think, Odo, when he has to say, really look at himself and his feelings for Loxana, even surprises himself with the depth of feeling he has for her. And you kind of get the feeling that he thinks, well, maybe I actually do love Loxana, and she should stay here, and we should be married.
Yeah, does want her to stick around.
Mm-hmm.
And even if I didn't get the feeling that he like loved her, but he does really value their friendship and mm-hmm. like have fun with her, because there's this like a cute little scene in the middle of the episode where he's like shapeshifting into different stuff, and she's mm-hmm. going around the room and just like shaking objects to see if she can find him.
And she fails.
And this is apparently a very fun game.
It doesn't look that fun to me, but I understood what they were getting at.
I'm not a shapeshifter. Like, I don't get it. But
that paints the picture, though, more of like, because, you know, Odo doesn't feel comfortable shapeshifting in front of a lot of people, so he can be his true self with Loxana, and that's what the point of that is, right? And they have mm-hmm. fun, and they're best pals, and I think Odo probably, maybe he thinks that we have this kind of love, right? This friendship. Friendship is a kind of love, and maybe it could develop into a deeper kind of love, and we'll have this kid, we'll raise the kid, you'll stay here because we're married, that'll be great.
Mm-hmm. Loxana's like, not really. Loxana's like, no, I want more than that. Like, I want all of it. I want everything.
Right.
And I don't think you can give that to me, and that's like fine, but I also can't hang around here like pining after you forever, which is more like classic Loxana, I think.
Yes.
Like, so restoring her agency from mm-hmm. earlier a little bit.
Because she's already booked tickets. She's like, I'm out of here.
Yeah.
I'm just stopping by to tell you I'm leaving. I'm not asking you, but we'll remain friends. And I guess eventually they'll annul the marriage or something.
Yes, right.
And it's nice to see.
Probably in the break between seasons or something.
One assumes. Maybe it just lapses. You have to, Tavnian wedding vows have to be renewed every 6 months or something.
I'm sure there's some very restrictive, specific clause in Tavnian law that we're just overlooking.
Yes. Once again, Star Trek writers, hello.
Yeah, come on, guys.
We need the full Tavnian codex of laws here to understand this episode. But it's kind of nice that she says goodbye, husband, and he, you know, a moment of understanding comes up because he's confused because Loxana, he figures, I know you love me, and you've always wanted a relationship. Here I am, and I'm gonna give it a go. But she, like you said, she knows it's not really what she wants.
Yeah.
And so he says goodbye, wife, and that's the kind of part, and it's kind of touching. So, that's the nice part of this episode. It's still, I don't understand why they made this episode.
Again, like, I'm going with bottle episode. I'm like, they need to save money. It's hard to do a Jake story with anybody else. Like, and they just stumbled into it. That's my explanation.
Memory Alpha tells me that this was actually an idea by Majel Barrett, and she wanted Loxana to arrive and say that she was having Odo's baby originally, and it was going to be about four different couples and interweaving stories, but that apparently wasn't working. And so
I feel like that storyline would have been less sweet.
Yes.
More like Maury-esque.
Yes. And we'd have Julia Bashir say, Odo, you were not the father.
And then Odo does a dance.
That's right. And Morn throws a chair or something.
Yes, exactly.
So what did you think of this episode overall?
Overall, I liked the B story more than I remember, and the A story is just kind of whatever. Like, it's not the worst. It's not even the worst that DS9 gets. I think the episode where Quark dresses as a woman is the worst that DS9 gets.
Yeah, it's not
but,
so good.
But yeah, it's just kind of a little nothing episode, a lull in a season that otherwise is like really ramping up the war and like doing more explicitly serialized things than before. Like, it serves its purpose, and you just kind of forget about it after you've seen it and move on with your life, you know?
Yes, unless someone emails you and says, hey, do you want to be on my podcast? You have to watch this episode.
Yes, right.
And I thank you for taking up the challenge, Andrew, and joining me. This was great.
Oh, yeah, it was great. Thanks for having me.